If I had to choose one favourite moment of EastEnders, it would have to be the moment when Peggy Mitchell decides to take her life. I love every single minute of it.
You will never leave me, will you?
No, sweetheart. Not for one single second.
It's really difficult trying to pick a favourite storyline because EastEnders does it all so well. The melodramatic ones, like the Six storyline, that's all the social realism ones, with Whitney being groomed by Tony. But I am a sucker for the whodunits, like who killed Archie, who killed Lucy, who shot Phil, and also, as we'll find out this week, who tried to kill Cindy.
There's nothing wrong with me. I am, Mum.
I love EastEnders because I feel like it is a show about real people going through real stuff, and I feel like I know a Stacey, a Martin, a Kathy, a Kat, and a Denise, and that's what sets it apart from anything else on telly.
Right. That's you lot sorted out. I can go now.
The woman that I was looking at him in the next, ripping each other's clothes off.
You take back what he said, you bitch! You cow!
Can't tell me what to do, you ain't my mother!
Yes, I am!
It's the one soap I always feel I've got the most defence for, the most commitment for, of all the episodes, and that's how much I love it.
Hello, darling.
Greetings, EastEnders fans, and welcome to Albert Square After Dark, your weekly EastEnders podcast. This week, discussing the episodes broadcast between the 17th to the 20th of February 2025, EastEnders' 40th anniversary. Wow, what a week it's been. I am emotionally put through the ringer. I am knackered. And so is this lovely lady. Hello, Ree. How are you this week?
I'm good, thanks, Rob. How are you, other than absolutely tired and drained emotionally and physically?
I am bereft. I mean, also, we have had, me and Ree have had a ridiculous week off the podcast. Ridiculous. Like, bless the BBC and all their local radio stations who have got us on their systems, who want to talk about EastEnders. Fantastic. We've been all over the place. We've not even had to leave our living rooms, have we?
I was at work the other day and I had to keep going, I'm sorry guys, the BBC are calling me again. It just sounds so surreal.
Ree was on the news. The actual news. Ree was on the news. Like, that's ridiculous. I was on Radio 2 last night. I have been interviewed in England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales.
All basically covered all the UK, Saz.
All the UK. I've done about 15 interviews all in all on the radio. It's been ridiculous. All this fame.
I think I'm a regular now on Radio Sheffield as well. I hope
you are.
So. That'd be great.
Wait till they call you to be on the news regularly, then you'll be interesting, won't you?
Oh, that'd wow, be good. That was very surreal. But annoyingly, it was whilst EastEnders was on.
Yeah, so you were on the actual BBC News, like rolling news channel, weren't you?
Yeah,
and they wanted to talk to you whilst the hour long special was on, didn't they?
And I didn't want to be like, guys, turn off the BBC News channel and go on to BBC One. Well, I probably should have said that.
Said that exact thing. So we'll try not to change too much from all our newfound fame. We will be tomorrow's fish and chip paper, I imagine.
But we're just normal people.
We are just normal people.
If you see us on the street,
don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated. But wow, what a week we have had in Walford. We have a ridiculous amount of things to get through this week. We have had births, we've had deaths, we've had gunshots, we've had revelations, we've had decisions, and we've had one hell of an explosion.
Mm-hmm. So, just a little bit,
with a cataclysmic result that actually, genuinely, I think will affect the show moving forwards. You know, they often use this for Walford will never be the same. I think actually it kind of won't be the same after this week.
I agree.
Mm. So, let's get on with it, shall we? It's Albert Square After Dark. Right, we'll start off the anniversary week with talking about The Choice, which weirdly, I think, was really the smallest part of the week, all in all, which I think kind of makes sense because given the decision that was made, I feel it was wise to not let the audience decide anything too mammoth. What's wrong with you lot? No, I understand. I do understand. And by the time it actually got to... I know you don't. By the time it got to the actual choice, I wasn't even surprised. I was sort of like, of course it's going to be Jack. Because actually, I was seeing less and less and less people agreeing with us online. I'd love to know what the actual voting percentage was.
Oh, and see, our Instagram DMs, there were a lot of people who were like, I've just voted Rave, voted for Rave, voted Rave. I'm like, oh, this is looking promising. It's definitely going to be Rave.
No, I always thought it was going to be Jack. I knew it was going to be Jack. So, I mean, let's talk about that moment then, because obviously that was revealed in the live episode. The Denise choice thing really was quite a small part throughout the week on the whole, wasn't it? Like, you had like a few scenes of Denise sort of being with the two different men and sort of looking lovingly at them and sort of selling each one to us, even though I think the Ravi cell was a lot harder than the Jack cell. I think the show wanted us to vote for Ravi, I'll be honest with you. I agree, but on the after show... when they did after the hour long on BBC Three, they did a little vote amongst the cast, and Chris Clenshaw was there, and he voted for Ravi.
I'm not surprised by that at all. I'm not surprised. That's the drama. We all know that's where the drama is. But
so, where is the drama going to be now? Do we reckon? So,
well, this is what I'm wondering. Is it going to be that she's still going to be pining after Ravi? Because surely she can't just turn her feelings off.
Exactly. Like she. All the way through this week was sort of telling Ravi how like lovely he was and how kind he was and how much she cared about him. And that none of that can be turned off, surely. So how is she going to just suddenly... It does feel like Denise has done a complete 360 on the whole Jack thing. It really does as a result of this choice. Which is what I mean why I kind of think the show wanted us to go for Ravi.
Well, it didn't work. They didn't do it very well.
No, it didn't work.
You know what? They shouldn't have let us see a moment with Ravi and Priya because you were saying...
That was it.
That probably changed
I think
some
that was
people
it.
Who were very team Ravi.
100%. I think it was the Priya thing that really pushed that Ravi towards that. I really, really do. And I think that's what actually made up people's minds, that they wanted Ravi as far away from Denise as possible just so he could be with Priya. So all the potential storylines and all the potential feuds that we could have gotten out of Denise and Ravi getting together, such as Priya versus Denise, the whole ongoing thing with Nugget, that was set to continue. Obviously, the Ravi and Jack feud, Chelsea being annoyed that Denise and Ravi are together. There was all that potential that's now gone. So let's look at what we have got now, which is Denise and Jack being together. Now, obviously, the Jack and Ravi feud is going to continue. That's not just going to turn off because Ravi can't turn his feelings off either. Mm-hmm. So what is Ravi's reaction to this going to be? Not great, I would assume.
No, this is it. Is he going to try and seek some revenge on Jack, or is Jack the other way around? He's still going to be feeling threatened by Ravi and he's going to try and pin something on him. I'm not sure, you know. I think... I've been wondering, but I don't know if they'd do this. I now want Ravi and Denise to have an affair.
And this is the thing, right? So obviously the writers can say, well, either way, we can make this storyline go, because presumably both roads can lead to one main road with terms of the story, right? So you can, whichever way the audience had gone, you're always going to end up back at the same point that the writers need to be at before they can kind of continue the main story. So it's about working out what actually the main story is going to be. Like we say, Ravi is not just going to turn his feelings off. Ravi's going to be vengeful. Ravi's going to be angry and hurt. And actually, understandably in this case, I think, because I do feel maybe that Denise has sort of led him along a little bit at this point, don't you?
I mean, oh no, she dumped him, didn't she? But they did become like official boyfriend and girlfriend,
for about 5 minutes.
Literally, I think, longer than that.
I have a bowl of cereal that took me longer to get through than that relationship, let me tell you.
Yeah. I just... Do you know what I'm going to say, Rob? Right. As soon as Denise showed up at Jack's door, I was like, bored. I'm bored. Not bothered. Bored. And then when they were sat down, having a lovely moment in the living room, I was like, boring. Where's the drama? Where's Ravi? Come on.
Oh, quick through the window, Ravi. Go on.
Maybe we'll start doing that. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I mean, I do think that Jack is going to feel threatened by Ravi, because if you were in Jack's shoes, would you trust Denise 100% at this point? Like, what? You'd be sat there going, why have you suddenly come back to me? What's going on here? And why is, you know, you and Ravi have still got a lot of history and clearly a lot of unresolved issues to get through. So why have you suddenly come back to me?
I think he's just happy to see her, though, isn't he? I know what you're saying, though. Down the line, you
were thinking, down the line, yeah. Immediately, he's thrilled. Like, yeah. But it's.
Do you think he'll have trust issues? Mind you, no, because I was going to say she wasn't having an affair with Ravi, but then she almost did when they almost were married, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now that Denise has actually managed to go the full way with Ravi and seen what those oak tree arms can achieve, then it's. You know, how is she not going to be tempted again? I feel like
keep thinking. Yeah,
yeah. I feel like the Ravi and Denise thing is far from over, and I feel like they'll definitely be going there again. There's no way that they can just turn it off. But also, what they've got to do is honour the vote, because otherwise, the viewers are going to be going, "What was the point in us voting if you're just going to put Ravi and Denise back together again?" So they've got to have a long-term-ish plan for Denise and Jack, and that's going to involve. That's going to involve the family as well, isn't it? Which a lot of people were a big fan of, to be fair. And I was a fan of Denise within that family unit. That was nice, you know, with Amy and Ricky. So that worked. But it's just sort of like, I don't want Denise to fade into the background because she's in this kind of storyless relationship.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. But clearly, we're supposed to think that Denise still loves Jack, which she probably always did to some extent. But do you know what? Everyone's saying this about Ravi. Has everyone forgotten that Jack cheated on Denise with Stacey?
Exactly. Exactly.
And that was like a full-blown affair as well, wasn't it? It weren't just like a one-night stand type of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what? The decision's been made. Yes. I guess I've got to respect the viewers.
I had to get over Brexit. I'll get over this. Well,
I'm still not quite over Brexit, so this might take a long time. Well,
so Brexit was nearly 10 years ago now. I may still be complaining about this decision in 10 years' time, you know? We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But that's the choice. If you voted for Jack, then fair play to you. Explain to me why in the comment section below, please, and we will try to understand. And let us know where you think the story's going to go from here. What do you think is the eventual plan? What's the long-term plan with Jack and Denise? And how long before Ravi rears his head again? Let us know. Right then, ladies and gents, let's now talk about Phil. Right then, on to Phil now, and what was the main reason that Grant came back. So Phil has continued to spiral, and as the wedding day of Honey and Billy arrives, he is resolute. He's going to end everything. He's written letters to people. He's going. He's got the gun ready to go in the safe with one bullet in it. Pay attention. It's one bullet in the gun. And he's all ready to go until Lexi comes to him and says that she wants to write a speech for Honey and Billy's wedding, which I think, again, sort of tugs at his heartstrings. It makes him quite emotional. I did enjoy the sort of Phil and Lexi scenes. I thought that was quite sweet, like sort of the youngest person in that family at the minute. And then the sort of the lion of the pack, so to speak. I thought it was quite nice.
Did you notice that as soon as she mentioned Lola that he just like started tearing up? Like that was showing his depression, like depressive state to me, that he was easily teary.
Yeah, I think what the Lola thing, I think, is quite a big factor in all of this, because I think the episode last week where he was talking to Jay sort of revealed that he's actually got a huge amount of survivor's guilt about Lola, hasn't he? So he feels that Lola did absolutely nothing wrong and her body absolutely gave up on her, whereas he has done nothing but bad things throughout his entire life, and he's tried his damnedest to make his body go against him, and it never ever does. So he feels a massive amount of guilt about that, I think, and that came across really nicely. I mean, obviously Steve McFadden in this storyline has been phenomenal. Okay, he's knocked it out of the park completely. One of his best performances ever, I would say.
I would say ever, if I'm honest with you. Like, incredible. Especially because it's so different to what he normally does as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you don't normally see this vulnerable side of Phil, do you? So it's nice to really explore and scratch away and sort of look at what a vulnerable Phil looks like. It's a very, very rare thing that we get a vulnerable Phil. So it was nice to see this new side of him for the anniversary. I really enjoyed it. Very, very good. However, one thing I'd like to question is, as he was listening to Lexi's speech at the wedding, he turns to Tracy and says, "I'll get a pint in, Trace." Now, I wasn't sure how to feel about this moment, because Tracy served it to him. And I'm like,
yeah,
would she? Like, she knows, she's been there from day dot, So she knows Phil. She knows, well, she slept with him, for Christ's sake. She knows his.
She knows him, all right.
And he was a beast and rocked her bed and rocked her world, so he did. As we are reliably informed by Tracy, as we all know. She served him. Now, I would like to pro-offer that she served him non-alcoholic beer because he said that it didn't taste the same as he remembered.
Possibly, but they didn't show us that, so I don't know that she did.
I feel like that's not canon.
And do you know that as a bartender, you have the right to refuse service to anybody for any like for any reason? That would be such a legitimate reason to not want to serve somebody.
Or at the very least, turn around to him and say, you can have a half and that's all you're having. At the very least. But she
just does nothing,
yeah.
Do you know what I was surprised at? Is that he wanted a pint.
Oh, see, no, I wasn't surprised. I understand. True. But I understood what he was. Well, maybe that's actually a sign of where he was at, though. He was like, I don't want to be indestructible because I'm already about to shoot myself. So what's the point of getting into that headspace? And maybe because different alcohols do different things to you, don't they?
Yeah, and whiskey
Never give me a Black Russian, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you. Bad things happen to me and to everyone around me.
You drink vodka Kirk anyway. All you're doing is adding Kahlua.
I know. Maybe it's the Kahlua.
It's the Kahlua for some reason.
Yeah, Kahlua and me. Well, we're an interesting mix. I've woken up in some ridiculous places, which I'm not going to go into here, but Kahlua and me. Anyway.
Not the one.
Well, maybe the one, but not for me the next day where I'm like, I have so many regrets.
And anyway, memories.
And very little, no, too many memories. Unfortunately, it doesn't delete my memories. It just leaves me with a hell of a lot of regret. Anyway, so I think that that's maybe why he didn't want whiskey. I think like beer is where he feels like he started. And all he wanted to do, I think, was have one last drink. I think he was going to leave it after that last pint. I think he just wanted that one pint and he was going to leave it there and then go off and do what he needed to do. But it just felt a little, I was sort of like, really, Tracy, you're serving him? That felt odd to me. But then having said that, Linda would never have served him. Was it worth it for the moment that they were going for then? And I got what they were going for at that moment, but it was sort of like how to get the beer to Phil at that moment. Maybe if, because they all know he's an alcoholic, maybe Anna could have served him it and she'd have been a little less confrontational with it, maybe. I don't know.
I agree with that. If Anna had served it, it wouldn't have felt as out of place as Tracy serving it to him. I've got to agree with that because Tracy's got such a big history with him. But then I guess you could argue that, you know, Anna's seen Linda and her alcoholism, so maybe she wouldn't have wanted to. I don't think anybody would have wanted to, really. But for Tracy to, I'm not sure.
Not sure. If Linda now tells her off next week, puts her in front of, you know, has a proper meeting with Tracy next week, me and you need to talk, lady, about alcohol.
I don't think she's got any bar shifts coming up anyway, to be honest, Robert.
No, that's true. I think it might they might be distracted by the events of this week to do a little bit of human resources, let's be honest. Before he can really even consume much of his beer anyway, Sharon, Grant and Nigel walk in and Sharon immediately starts going, what are you doing? You're selfish. Why are you having a beer? Like, and starts going after him like a little blonde chihuahua. And he says, well, it doesn't really taste the same to me anyway. And then apologises for the past 35 years of any ton of upset and everything like that. I was kind of fascinated by Grant's reaction throughout all of this, and I expected this completely off Grant, and I saw a lot of people online saying that they were really disappointed in Grant's reaction, and I can't disagree enough, because I think this was totally in character for Grant the whole week.
I agree. The only moment where I thought maybe he would have a bit more understanding, as we know, Grant is ex-army, and I did wonder, maybe he's got friends who've gone through
PTSD
this.
PTSD sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe he'd be a bit more understanding in that respect, but I don't think he has from how he was this week. And I didn't think it was out of character at all for him. And it's a bit of a man up kind of attitude that he had as well, I
absolutely
think.
Expected
totally
that.
On brand. Yeah.
Absolutely expected that. I was fully expecting him at some point to say something like man up or suck it up or something like that. And they completely delivered with that. Because this, you've got to remember with Grant, they had exactly the same upbringing. Yeah, they have the same dad who drilled that attitude into Phil, also drilled it into Grant. They may be ricocheting into slightly different directions. Arguably, you could say that Grant went in the Phil direction before Phil went in the Phil direction, and maybe Grant has calmed down in recent years while Phil's kind of continued to sort of ping pong off the walls and go all crazy. But I feel like Grant's reaction to it was completely expected. It's totally what... Because we said, like, well, I don't really know why Nigel thought to ring Grant, because it's not like Grant's going to come back as some sort of mental health guru, is it?
No, but I think it was just maybe Nigel's thinking was, you know, his brother.
Family,
Surely his
close
brother will be
people.
able to help. Yeah, it'd be nice for him to see his brother at the very least. It might perk him up a little bit because I think even Nigel didn't understand the extent of how badly Phil's been, did he? So.
No, well, he's been chucked out, wasn't he? So he hasn't really seen, he hasn't seen the sort of the psychosis element so much that was starting to come into play with it, has he? Talking to Grant, I did enjoy the Grant and Bianca scenes. They
Oh,
were so
yes.
earned, with Bianca basically turning around to Grant and tearing into him about Tiffany and about the way that he treated her, because they've not had as they've this is the first time they've seen each other in years, Grant and Bianca. So for Bianca to be able to have that moment, and I'm glad they put some time aside for that, because that was very well
Yeah.
deserved.
And it was a nice little reminder for everyone about past scenes and, you know, Tiffany. And let's all remember what happened with Tiffany as
Courtney,
well. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for him to say, oh, Courtney, did you say Courtney's going to be 28 this year? Oh, are
That's
you
older than Tiffany.
joking?
Older than Tiffany was when she died. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't
I
it?
remember baby
Yeah,
Courtney. That is
so do I.
crazy. I feel so old.
I remember Tiffany being pregnant with her. It's just
Yeah.
we are so old, Ri. Old and famous.
Well, at least we've got the
At
F on
least we've
our side,
got
the
that. At least we've got that.
fame now.
But yeah, no, that was all excellent. I
Yeah.
was really, really happy, and actually, every single word that Bianca said to him, I was like, "Yes, get him told," because it's too rarely that the Mitchell brothers get properly torn into about the way that they treat women. Like Phil
Yeah.
has never been properly punished for the way that he treated Lisa, in my opinion,
No,
because
true.
Lisa was a relatively sort of sane, steady, together human being before she got with Phil. And now look at the way that Lisa is on a day-to-day basis. And that is all Phil's fault, I would argue. So I'm
Yeah.
glad that Bianca had that moment with Grant. He needed telling. So Phil totters off to the to home, getting ready to shoot himself. Unbeknownst to Phil, Cindy's got there first. And we'll talk about Cindy's role in all of this a little bit later on. But what he doesn't realise is that the one bullet that he was put in the gun has now been put into Ian's arm. Now, is there something, some sort of thing to be said about the, considering the feud between Phil and Ian? Is there something to say about a bullet with Phil Mitchell's name on it being in Ian Beale's arm?
This is it, isn't it? Because did Ian actually get, like, what happened to his arm? What? So it's just in his arm and he's fine.
They didn't really
Like,
refer
they.
to it ever again, did they? I'm assuming
No,
he
this
just
is what
ripped
I
out of his
mean.
teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just going to assume that he doesn't need to go to hospital. Is he just going to have it in his arm forever? Like, what happened? Or did it just skim off him and he's not actually got the bullet in him? So that
I don't
bullet's in
know.
Beale House.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the rest of the like the live episode, Ian was sort of holding his arm, so it was still there, sort of. But it was sort of
Yeah.
like I don't know how much mention of it we're going to have. I'm not saying there's not going to be any ill effects from it or anything, but I thought it
No.
was interesting that a bullet with Phil Mitchell's name on it,
Yeah.
given the feud that they had for hundreds of years between the two of them since birth, that they that bullet ended up in Ian. I thought that was quite interesting. But we'll talk about Cindy later on. But he's now got a gun with no bullet in it. So he goes to the archers. Linda, Phil and Linda. Oh my God.
Yeah. You asked for that last week and they delivered, didn't they?
And
He said,
they
please
gave
let
it.
Linda have a conversation with it. Oh, Linda, she's been so. Kelly Bright is honestly just
Oh,
incredible
she's
herself,
one of the
isn't she?
best. She's one of the best. I want that woman to be knighted. And I thought that was a really sweet moment when Phil turned around to her and said, I'm really proud of you. Really proud of you. Well
Yeah.
done. Like, that was
But that's when she was
gorgeous.
like, there's something seriously up,
Yeah,
isn't
why is he
there?
being nice? What's wrong with
Yeah. Yeah, she's
him?
like,
Yeah, so she goes around to his house and discovers he's not there, but she discovers all the letters. She picks up the one to Sharon, which I think I agree, actually. I think I'd have done the same in that in Linda's shoes at that point. Like, if all the
Yeah.
letters there, I'd have read Sharon's 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Because I don't think Sharon would have minded her reading
No.
it either.
And
No.
when you've got a load of letters, and I think she looked at the
Yeah.
safe as well, and kind of, I'm assuming that everyone knows that Phil keeps a gun in his
Of
safe,
course.
saw an open safe and
Yeah.
with nothing in it and a load of letters on there. You're putting two and two together, I think, quite quickly, aren't you? So for her
Yeah.
to read Sharon's letter at that moment, I'd love to have known what it said. I'd love to see,
I was just thinking that.
I'd love to know what a letter from Phil looks like, scrawly,
I
I
wonder if
imagine,
we will see it. So,
like a letter from Hagrid.
well, you never know. Maybe Linda will give it to Sharon because she's going to be in hospital, isn't she? Sharon as well. Maybe she will actually give it to her and be like, by the way, you need to know this. And this is what Phil put in the letter. Although she did have a moment, didn't she, Linda, where she said, no, you need to tell Sharon all this stuff face to face. So, do you think he was declaring his undying love for Sharon?
I imagine so, yeah. I imagine so. You're the one, all of that kind of thing, yeah, which bodes not well for Teddy and Sharon's relationship, by the way.
Well, this is what I'm thinking now. I think after everything that's happened, Sharon's just going to end it with Teddy and maybe get back with Phil, if I'm honest with you.
100%.
I'd be more surprised if she doesn't, put it that way.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I reckon that given what happened in the Vic, I reckon there might be a little bit of another moment between her and Grant before he leaves again.
Yes.
But I think ultimately she's going to go back with Phil because she's a glutton for punishment, is our Shazza. I mean, get a different family. Try a different family, Sharon. You might be happier, you know?
Try a different surname.
Try someone with hair. Stop it. The more hirsute won't hurt you. Try that, Shazza. Honestly.
So do you think that Grant's going to be around for a while longer yet now that Phil, obviously Phil's...
Well,
he's not being sectioned. Is an informal person.
Yeah, it's an informal thing. Well, spoiler alert, I don't know much, but he is in next week's episodes as well.
Oh, okay.
So we've got more Grant to come. Hopefully more Grant and Bianca as well. That might be nice. And some more Grant and Nigel. Because... Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Linda, Nigel and Grant all run across to the archers and see Phil with the gun, trying to persuade him otherwise. Grant now realises what stage Phil is at. And Phil pulls the trigger, tries to kill himself, but obviously the bullet is not in the gun, so it's just an empty gun. And Grant is like livid and furious, like, what are you doing? What if that had been loaded? And kind of loses his mind a little bit. And I think he sort of goes into self-preservation mode a little bit, because that's when he starts saying things like, he needs to suck it up. And Nigel's like, what are you on about? This is why I called you back. He's suicidal. Get a grip, man, for Christ's sake. And that's when we get those really nice scenes between Phil and Linda. Beautiful stuff there. Absolutely loved it. Those two... Oh, I love them. Now, I saw a couple of people online going, really? And I don't want that. Not in the slightest.
If they were both off the wagon, I wouldn't mind it.
Oh, yeah. I always said I wanted a two-hander between Phil and Linda.
Yeah.
Battered.
That'd be brilliant. And
the best thing ever made.
Possibly a baby from it, right?
No,
baby from it. So, you know, maybe... Yeah, I wouldn't have minded that. You know, why not? Phil, that's so Phil, isn't it?
How many kids does Phil need, for God's sake?
Exactly. Why not?
Two toddlers. Don't need another baby. Makes. No, never. I don't want to.
You know how he and Denise had that one-nighter and ended up having Raymond? I always envisaged that could have happened between him and Linda.
There is a closeness. I think that Linda has managed to promote herself in Phil's head to second in command to Sharon in terms of who he's prepared to be open with.
Yeah, I can see that. And he just trusts her, doesn't he? Mm. Well, you said it last week about how Linda trusted Phil in her darkest moments and how you think that could then get returned. And I think you were spot on with that. That's exactly what we saw this week.
That's what we got this week. I thought it was beautiful. Honestly, the Phil and Linda stuff was really, really nice. I love their relationship so much because actually they are completely different people in many ways. You know, you can't really imagine someone like Linda who at her most sort of day to day, when she hasn't got madness going on in her life, is actually kind of quite... I don't want to say prim and proper, but she's a million miles away from the underworld and the gangstery world men walking, strutting around in leather jackets and twiddling guns in their fingers. Do you know what I mean? She's a different woman to that. So it's really interesting to sort of see this juxtaposition of two different characters be this emotionally honest with one another. Mm. It's amazing. And the fact
I was going to say they're bonded over both being alcoholics there. So they both know deep down how they both feel, because that's probably a huge thing. A massive part of both of the characters. So even though they're different in so many ways, they both understand what it's like to be an alcoholic and an addict. Mm. So I think that's why they can get on so well, like they have been.
But you can't see Linda Mitchell in the future.
No, definitely not. No. It's nice to just have these platonic friendships anyway. Let's just have some friends. Come on.
Yeah.
God, could you imagine? Hey, you never know, in 10 years' time, we might be making a decision. Is Phil going to choose Sharon or Linda? You never know, Rob.
Yeah. And they'll do that wrong as well. And we'll be furious about that all over again. It's literally Denise, Jack and Ravi all over again, we should be saying. Yes, as we're sat here adjourned in gold, because it'd be the 50th then. Yes, golden anniversary. Yes. So, meanwhile, Nigel's busy ringing this mental health team, which arrived so quickly, as they always do in Walford for moments like this. And they arrive, and Phil's like, nope, not going with them. Nope. And Nigel, at that point, reveals to Phil his diagnosis about dementia.
Yes.
Basically says to him, I need you. I need you to help me through this, all right? Go with them. You might be able to help me. If you don't, then you can't help me and I'm alone with this. Please, can you just go with them? Mm-hmm. Which worked, I think. Because we were sort of theorising, how is Nigel's dementia going to help Phil? I don't think that's going to cheer him up, to be fair.
No, but we did keep mentioning it might give him a bit of purpose when he sees that somebody actually needs him. Which Nigel did tell him, explained quite well, I thought.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I also thought that it were a bit of one of those where you could go, do you know what, Phil? Nigel can't really get any proper help for his dementia. He's got to accept that's the way his mind's going. You can actually get some help, so take it while you can. Because this is what's going to, if you don't, then you'll end up being too late and you won't ever be able to get any help, so take it while you can, kind of thing.
Yeah. So you can improve, he can't.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so eventually he sort of goes with the people and is taken off to the facility or at the hospital or wherever he has gone to. And again, a moment where Grant's sort of watching him and it's like, it's interesting. I was trying to work out Grant's reaction at that point because he was getting a bit emotional watching Phil get into the ambulance. Mm. So I was sort of like, is he more emotional about the fact that he missed all of this and didn't see this in Phil and wasn't amazingly helpful? Or was he emotional about the fact that a Mitchell was having to be taken away in that regard?
Interesting. Maybe a bit of both, you know. Probably a bit of both. I was a bit surprised that he didn't agree, that he didn't offer to go with him, Grant, because I'm sure Linda offered to go with him and he said no.
Yeah.
That should have been the moment that Grant went.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping now you said Grant's here next week that he's going to go and visit him and that we're going to see a little bit of Phil.
I hope so. Because I think that before Grant goes, Phil and Grant need to have the Eric conversation. I think that needs to happen because they both need to look at each other and say, we are messes because of that man and it's time that we sorted ourselves out. Because I wonder if Bianca's conversation with Grant saying that you're a psychopath and you always will be might kind of plant a seed in Grant's head about something and he might go on his own little mini journey with it and sort of
interesting culminate. Because I don't see any glimpses right now of Grant ever being able to have that kind of conversation, so you could have a point that Bianca's planting the seeds for him to start thinking about things himself like that. And so combine that with seeing Phil in his current state, maybe it will be a bit of an epiphany for Grant as well.
Yeah, bring it on. Very, very interesting stuff. Right then, ladies and gents, let's move on now to the whodunit. So, the Cindy whodunit was answered this week. Safe to say, we got it utterly, totally, and completely wrong.
What are you talking about? It was
Koja. Still, do you know what? I went into this week convinced it was Kojo. I know we've given lip service on the podcast to the possibility that it might be other people, but neither of us meant it at all. No. We were convinced that it was Kojo. I went into this week convinced it was Kojo. Even when Kathy is stood there saying, no, it's me, I did it. I was sat there thinking, how are they going to twist this so that it was actually Kojo?
I was convinced. Were it Kathy, do you like Kojo or something?
Were you defending Kojo? I understand, you know, because you're a very, very heart-filled woman. I understand why you might defend Kojo. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But no, Kojo had nothing to do with it whatsoever. We are silly.
Did he not, though, Rob?
I'm afraid it wasn't Kojo. And I'm afraid also, Ree, that it wasn't Louie either. Because Ree has been messaging me all week trying to recreate the Bobby moments that she did for the Lucy anniversary, saying, oh, it's Louie. I'm telling you, it's Louie. I've been working it out. Everything makes sense for it to be Louie. And I was like, it can't be Louie. That shovel was too heavy for a 5-year-old. It was not Louie.
You know, when Kathy said it was her, I was like, she's covering for Louie. She's covering for Louie then. It's Bobby.
I've got to be honest. But I was so unconvinced that it was Kathy. When Kathy said it was her, I was like, oh, God, please don't let it be Louie. No, I'm ending the podcast if it's Louie. I'm telling you now, we wouldn't have had a podcast. I would have walked off. Salt.
Well, Rob, you say that, and a part of me isn't very happy that it's Kathy, though.
So let's talk about it being Kathy, because I've got to be honest, I don't know if I'm 100% satisfied with it being Kathy, because it feels odd for it to be Kathy. Now, you could look at it from the side of this is the end of a 35... Well, it's not the end, because clearly it's going to continue, but this is the sort of mini culmination of a 35-year feud where Kathy has literally watched Cindy destroy Ian's life time and time again, tried to have him shot, broken his heart multiple times, pretended to be dead, wrecked her family more times than she can count and had just done it all over again. And you could say that, yeah, Kathy had enough at that moment. But I got to be honest, I struggle with the notion that Kathy would react that way by brutally bashing her over the head with a shovel in a premeditated. Yes. It wasn't a lash out. It was a premeditated, brutal bludgeoning on the back of the head.
Yeah, I agree, because Kathy doesn't seem like like someone who's going to go and strike someone, as much as she hates Cindy.
Yeah.
But then I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit here. Like, and then she saved her in the explosion. Well, why did you try and kill her and hit her by hitting her over the head with a shovel? It's pretty brutal. And then save her in an explosion where you could have quite easily left her to die and made it look like an accident.
Yeah. And even that, when she was saving her, I thought that during the confrontation between Ian, Kathy and Cindy in the living room, I got the sense that Ian was looking at Kathy, not believing her.
Yes.
And then I also got the impression that when it was Cindy and Kathy alone in the pub together, I thought they were leading into Cindy going, "Wasn't you, was it? You didn't do it at all." I thought that there was going to be some twist at the end where it was Kathy was defending somebody. Yes. I had it in my head that Bobby was going to show up at the end of the week and or something like that, you know, but they didn't go there in the end. Now, unless they reveal it later.
No, I feel like it, because it still felt like there was a twist. So after we found out it was Kathy, I was like, right, so later in the week, we're going to find out the twist and that actually it wasn't Kathy. But you would think if there is a twist coming, they would have done it this week.
Within the week.
For me, there's no way that they're going to keep us thinking it was Kathy and then add another twist down the line. Surely not. I wouldn't have thought so at this stage.
It's just Kathy,
isn't it? We've just got to accept that it's Kathy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a problem with it. It sort of feels a little bit incomplete. Like,
it felt underwhelming, the reveal itself as well, if I'm quite honest.
Which is really weird, because in a lot of ways, you know, like I said, it would sort of make sense for Kathy to want to get rid of Cindy, but actually what we're talking about is Kathy here. And all the things that Kathy has ever gone through and the things that have been done to Kathy by people over the years, she's never reacted like that to any of it.
No. Maybe we should have seen Kathy having some anger issues, you know, subtle ones or something.
Something to sort of suggest that she was capable of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe we're going to see that now and go, "Oh, right. Well, actually, we've not seen this side to Kathy. She clearly had enough on Christmas Day and now."
Like, it's really weird. Even in the sixth storyline, I would have bought Kathy being the killer, I'm sure. But
yeah, in that moment, because it would have been a self-defense thing. Yeah. Something
that was emotionally sort of that insane, that she at that moment her brain went to, "You need to die, and I need to defend people. I need to do this right now.
I'm gonna save Sharon."
Yeah, or something. You know, I feel like they could have sold Kathy being the killer in the sixth storyline, but with this, I wonder if it's a case of, because it was an attack that failed, it widens their goalposts a little bit to make it anybody. Because this doesn't make Kathy a murderer. It makes her an attempted murderer, which actually in the world of soap and all the rules that go with it, whereas we think that 9 times out of 10, unless your name's Janine, that you don't want the killer to get caught. So now with this, I wonder if, because it's a failed murder attempt, she hasn't actually killed anybody.
Yeah, I don't know. Even the fact that it's an attempted murder, the fact is it was an attempted
murder. Yeah, she tried to kill Cindy.
It just wasn't successful. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I feel like you say, it feels incomplete.
Mm.
And I'm trying to figure out why it is. Is it because we need to find out more details about how she was feeling on the night, specifically with Kathy?
Yeah.
Was there something that really... I'm still not convinced it was.
No, neither am I. And we shouldn't be feeling like this at this stage, I feel. No. So that means that I feel like this hasn't quite landed quite well. Because this is... I was expecting maybe some form of flashback or something like that to sort of show.
Yeah.
Now, I understood, like, Kathy taking the locket, fair enough, because as she said to Cindy, why should you have any memories of this family whatsoever after everything you've done to them? Mm-hmm. Like, fine, yep, got that completely. That's understandable. Yeah. I agree with you, actually, as well. Why the hell should Cindy have the nerve to want anything from that family, and as if she ever had a right to care about anybody in that family after the way that she treated them? Fair enough. But I don't know, the attempt, calling Kathy an attempted murderer feels weird.
Yeah. And did you as well at one moment think that Kathy was just saying it so that Cindy wouldn't shoot Ian?
Yes, 100%. That was my initial. She'd have said anything. Yes, she would have said anything in that moment. In fact, this is what I mean. Throughout the whole thing, throughout that scene with the gun, when she said it, I was sort of like, huh? But then sort of kind of became less and less sort of like stunned by the revolution. So I was sort of like, but well, that's not it. That can't be it, surely.
Though, is it?
Yeah. And for us to be feeling like that throughout the entirety of the week kind of makes me think that it didn't land like they wanted it to. Or there's more, or there is more to it.
I feel like there isn't more to it now. I just think there's more to it that would have shown it this week.
So do I. I mean, there's stuff that we still don't know the answers to about the night that Cindy was attacked. We have no idea what exactly George was doing that night still. We've no clue. Amelia the sex worker didn't show up this week, and I thought that she was going to have a role in something this week. She hasn't appeared again. So there's a few unanswered questions about what happened that night. You know, something weird was going on with Peter. I think Ian was very suspicious of Peter throughout the week. Even that I would have bought over Kathy.
I would have as well. I would have bought Peter over Kathy more, because at least we saw him drinking as well, didn't we?
Yeah. In fact, you know what? I can say, actually, thinking about the nine suspects, even if you remove Kojo from the situation, which I feel like we must now do.
Yeah, we do need to. We were wrong.
All right. We were wrong about Kojo and we're sorry. But I feel like if I look at the nine suspects, each and every one of them, I would have bought being the attempted killer more than Kathy.
Yeah, same. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Maybe not George. I don't think that George.
No, do you know what? I could have understood George.
That over
Yeah, 100%. I can imagine. Yeah, because George was angry that night, and George was kind of watching this woman who had sort of like, and you know, watching this woman destroy his children's lives again, and he realised that she'd been sleeping with Junior, and just anger overcame him. Because we know that George gets angry, and George, you know, gets violent when he's angry because he has to go and do boxing and stuff. So I would have bought it. It would have been a logical journey to get there. But
yeah, I know what you're saying. Do you think there's going to be anything come of the fact that Harvey was Kathy's alibi? Do you think he actually knew what she'd done or something?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, surely the Kathy Harvey thing is going to sort of continue a bit. It's not been mentioned for weeks, but I'm assuming it's going to pick up again at some point soon.
Yeah, because I noticed her giving him a brew in the cafe on the live episode, and I was like, hang on. Why were you so keen on giving her an alibi then? He proper jumped in. And she was waiting for a cab. Was it Harvey driving? I'm telling you. Why was she waiting 40 minutes for a cab when there were a cab office right there?
I mean, I know. It was Christmas Day. And maybe she didn't want anyone from the square to know where she was going at that point, maybe, as well. Yeah. Maybe that's why she rang an Uber. Maybe. So that all kind of came out. We'll put a pin in it as to whether it's actually, I still don't know we're saying that surely it would have all been revealed this week. I still kind of feel like maybe there's more to reveal. I don't know though.
Maybe at Martin's funeral.
Maybe. Because Cindy has a lot of stuff on her hands at the moment, which we will come to shortly. But my God, that woman. She won't have a guilty conscience whatsoever, but she needs to have a guilty conscience about what she's done.
Even an ambulance?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God for your mother-in-law or something. And she was.
Screw her. Screw her. Bitch. Yeah, literally. I mean, so this all, what then kicks off the big events of the week is Cindy. Cindy does this single-handedly, all right? So She's chasing Ian through the streets. This whole revelation about Kathy attacking her has been revealed. Cindy and Ian have had a tussle, and Ian's now got a bullet in his arm. Phil kind of bumps into Phil. I like the moment where Cindy sort of ran out, all sort of stunned and dazed, bumped straight into Phil. Phil was like, "Have you got the gun?" "Yeah, sorry, I didn't use it. Phil was like, "Shut up," and sort of strolled off.
Oh, yeah.
Quite funny. And then Ian catches up with her and starts saying to her, "Well, look, please don't tell the police, all right? I'll pay you. It tries everything, basically. Goes from, I'll pay you, I'm sorry, to, you say anything, I'm going to make your life a living hell. You know, and basically just kind of goes like that. At that moment, Reese comes speeding around the corner for reasons that we should discuss shortly. And Cindy decides that, seeing as though Ian has just given her the choice of what she wants to do, she now wants to kill Ian. So she pushes him into the path of Reese's car. Reese swerves. Cindy looks down at Ian, horrified, as though somebody else did it.
What are you doing? Get up, Ian.
Reese swerves to avoid Ian and crashes into the side of the Vic, into the barrel store, where all these naughty little gas canisters are sat there stacked for the barbecue for the wedding, and a fire starts. I absolutely howled at the moment where Cindy took one look at that and then tried to walk away.
Cindy's such a train wreck, isn't she?
She's such a messy human being. Oh, she was literally trying to walk off then as though she'd seen nothing.
Wasn't me. I
can do that. What's Ian doing in the road? Blame him. Funny. Honestly, she makes me laugh so much, Jacinda. She's such a ridiculous woman. And so at that moment, George kind of comes out and like sends Kathy and Cindy. Well, Cindy is sent to go get a fire extinguisher. Kathy chases her because there's no way that she's getting away with this. And at that moment, that's when the pub goes kaboom. Bang! It goes up like a firework. Let's talk about the explosion, okay? Because the explosion was something quite spectacular, wasn't it? Very good CGI.
Just a little bit.
It was very good. Very good explosion.
It was really good. But I thought the entire Vic would be on fire.
You thought the whole thing was just going to be obliterated. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, literally.
So sort of bearing in mind where the explosion came from, which was the barrel store. It's sort of... Because I've watched the explosion back quite a few times now, and it's sort of what happens is, it's like the force of the explosion blows out all the windows, like all the like things collapse. The upstairs kitchen of the Vic is no more. That's gone. That doesn't exist anymore because the roof caved in and just basically landed in the street and it was just all wrecked. The Vic is absolutely wrecked, by the way.
You sent me a photo of the roof and said that's landing on someone. Was that the beam?
So there was a...
Did you see that one?
There was a segment of the roof that had like what looked to me to be a very deliberate crack. And I thought that was where the surprise death was going to come from. I thought someone was going to get out safely and then a section of the roof was going to fall down Final Destination style and smash him on the street. Didn't happen though.
Got it. Right, okay. I was fully believing you when you sent me that photo. Like, yeah, I think it'll be that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, trapped in the wreckage of the Vic. We'll talk about the Vic stuff properly in a minute, but trapped in the wreckage of the Vic, Cindy and Kathy are sort of trapped together behind the bar. I was confused as to where they were for a start off, but they were kind of behind the bar. Yeah. I think that's where the fire extinguisher must be kept. And Kathy must have literally Kathy must have literally pursued her all the way around. You're not getting away with this. And then the pub must have blown and they were trapped underneath the bar, it looked like. And Kathy did save Cindy's life at that moment. So again...
Yeah, after trying to kill her.
Yeah, feels weird. Feels very, very weird.
A couple months ago.
Yeah,
feels odd. Literally to go over with a shovel with the intent of trying to kill someone. And then, mind you, having said that, she was going to leave her.
She did try because she had just tried to kill Ian again in front of Kathy. But that's what I mean. That good side of Kathy came out over leaving her there despite everything.
And the fact that she could have saved herself a bit sooner as well, Kathy. But instead, you know, she went to the effort to really help Cindy and then said, oh, no, I'm not leaving you here now. I don't know. There's something not quite sitting right.
It feels
right
weird,
with all
doesn't
this,
it? It feels weird. It feels weird. But, yeah, Cindy's taken away to hospital and clearly has absolutely no interest in being nice to Kathy, has no interest in sort of not making this feud continue and continue and continue. My thinking is at this moment, ultimately, they're in a stalemate situation with the attack at Christmas and the fact that Cindy caused that. Because all that needs to happen, I feel like Cindy's crime is much worse than what Kathy did. Because nobody died with what Kathy did, but two people died and a lot of people got injured in what Cindy did. So,
yes. Do you know something else that I noticed at the start of the week? And I was like, why has Martin just said that? So, you know, when you were putting up the bunting, Martin said, I can always trust you, can't I, Auntie Kath? So now, with what's happened, I'm wondering if Kathy's going to be like, can I tell people about what happened, like, that it was Cindy who basically caused this? Mm. Is that where that... I don't know if I'm overreading that, but for some reason, when he said it, I was like, that feels deliberate, him saying, I can always trust you, can't I, Auntie Kath? So is she going to try and somehow avenge Martin for what happened?
I think that's the ultimate sort of thing to be taken away from that line, which was quite a sweet little exchange at the start of the week where it didn't look like Martin was going to be dying. It was quite a sweet little exchange.
I did when he was putting that bunting up.
Of course you did.
I called it last week, mate. I said it was Martin.
Psychic Ree strikes again.
It's not that, but because I was watching it thinking it's going to be Martin or Sonia, I was looking for any little thing, and I was just like, seems like too sweet of a little moment that they're all having.
Whilst you were busy looking for clues that Phil was going to start the fire at the Vic and Louis was the attacker. Yeah. It must have been a busy place, your brother.
Yeah, I did get over the Phil thing. Well, the Phil thing did seem quite a reasonable thing to assume, though, seeing as though he has set it on fire before.
Before, yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. That's true. So, yeah, but I agree with you in the sense that I do think Kathy is going to totally try and avenge Martin's death at this point with Cindy, 100%. And she won't be the only one, let me tell you. Cindy's days may be numbered. Right, before we get to everything that kicked off in the Vic, we've got one tiny little thing to discuss, and that is Reese and the arrival of Julia. So, on to Reese and Sonia and Bianca and all of the live birth and everything that crazy that happened there. So Reese, eventually, we sort of knew he was going to come back for some sort of dramatic purpose, didn't we? And he did, because while Sonia is at the wedding, Bianca kind of can't face it, which you can understand, really, can't you? She has just been locked up in a lockup for 3 months. I can understand her wanting to get away from it all.
I think she needs some downtime. I mean, she had quite a lot of downtime.
She's done nothing but downtime for 3 months.
You know what? She needed the option of Netflix instead of old videos.
Yes, old videos are quiz shows. Yeah, she needs to get that knowledge of, like, old 80s knowledge out of her brain and watch something a little bit more modern, doesn't she? Bless her.
Imagine all those times she's in that lockup thinking, I wish I just had Netflix at least. Yeah, I can't wait until I get out of here. That's the first thing I'm going
to
do.
I feel like if I was in Bianca's shoes, I would have persuaded Reese to get me Netflix at the very least.
Yeah. Somehow. Yeah, you could have been like, get some internet. Or a PS5.
Well,
you know, then she'd have been able to communicate to people on games or something, Rob. That's true.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so Bianca is home alone on the wedding and Reese arrives. He wants to give Sonia a good luck card because she's about to give birth.
Oh, so sweet of him.
So sweet. So lovely. And they've got a lovely range, apparently. They have a lovely range in the shop. That's good to know. It's good to know. Bianca's like, you're crazy. Why are you here? That's quite mad. You do realise the police are after you. You're a wanted man. And Reese tries to leave. And then Bianca tries to ring the police. And then Reese pushes her on the stairs, pulls her phone out of her hands, flings it into the living room, and then runs away like a penguin. I loved it. Yes. That was quite fun. Bless him.
I was like, come on, Bianca. How are you not more ready for this? You should be on to 999 already. Or at least just like wait until he's left. Like he was quite clearly leaving. Just wait 2 seconds and then
ring the police. Yeah. But no, she wanted to do it to his face, didn't she? Because that's Bianca. You know what? She wanted. Yeah, well, if there's a more confrontational way of doing something, that's the way that Bianca's always going to do it. Let's be real here.
This is why I love Bianca. This is why I love her.
Well, she's your patroness, isn't she? She's your spirit animal.
Yeah.
If you were surrounded by dementors, Ree would do a patroness charm and out from her wand would burst this orange sort of thing just screaming Ricky at the top of its voice, wouldn't it?
Expecto Patronum, Ricky!
That's how it would work.
Do you know what? You know how we got asked last week, which character would you compare yourself to? After I thought about it, I thought I'd somehow compare myself to Bianca if I got asked it again.
Oh, okay.
In some ways. Please, not all of the ways, please, obviously.
Please dye your hair red.
I don't think that'd suit me, Rob.
I think it would.
You don't need to be looks-wise. You know, the fieriness. She's a bit gobby and shit. I wouldn't say I was that gobby, but, I know you would. You just don't see it. You actually don't see it when I'm recording, guys.
No.
I can be quite gobby.
She makes me edit it out. You should see what's on the cutting room floor, let me tell you. Honestly, yes. Anyway, so Reese is desperately trying to escape. They did a good fake out, I thought, because Reese drove past the Vic at one point, and I was sort of like, wait, what? Why would he come back? That's confused me. What's going on? That was a very good fake out. Very good fake out.
It was, actually.
The reason he comes back is because the road's blocked further down, so he has to reverse and then come back again, which is why he then comes across Ian, lying on the floor, tries to swerve to avoid him, crashes into the side of the Vic. Now, that means that the car is ablaze. He's temporarily slumped unconscious at the steering wheel. George pulls him out, rests him down by the car, and then the next time George turns around, Reese is gone. He's disappeared. Mm. Where had he gone? Not far is the answer. He'd managed to get down the alleyway and then become unconscious again by the alleyway door. And then the explosion knocked him out.
Why did he go in the alleyway when he could see everything was on fire? He just wanted to hide somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's it. He wanted to hide somewhere, didn't he? And if you want to hide, you're going to go down an alleyway rather than in the open street, aren't you, I suppose? Because he knew that Bianca was chasing him as well. So that's probably why.
I forgot about that. Yeah, true.
So the pub explodes and that presumably knocks Reese out. Now, Sonia and Lauren, meanwhile, who have been enjoying the wedding party in the Vic, both pregnant, decide that they want ice cream at that moment.
Yes.
I don't think.
Can come.
Yeah, is that a thing?
Yes. All I wanted, at one point, I just wanted vanilla ice cream all the time.
Is that all? Just vanilla?
Oh, I do like vanilla ice cream, though, to be fair.
Right, so that's not a craving. That's just your personal preference. She just wants
an ice cream. No, that's my personal preference for flavour, but I'm never normally like, oh, I could eat some ice cream. That wasn't
definitely
a pregnancy thing.
Yeah, because I would argue craving would be vanilla ice cream covered in like pickles or something crazy like that. That's craving ice cream. As far
I
as
didn't
I'm
get
concerned.
That many that you'd consider crazy. No, just
my auntie
just crave something that you wouldn't normally eat all the time, I'd say.
My auntie ate coal.
Well, then she was iron deficient. Rob.
Yeah,
there you go.
I don't know what makes a lady's brain decide, I need to eat coal, especially if you don't understand if you're not that scientifically minded and think of coal, iron, your body just makes you eat coal.
It's called pica, where you crave non-food items when you're pregnant, and it means that you're very deficient.
There you go. Learned something new this week. There we go. Right, so Lauren and Sonia are in the kitchen. That's when the pub blows. What I loved was the fact that they were trapped. So Lauren was like, love more ice cream then. Yeah, that works. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Perfect. You might as well while you're there. And if that's
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. I was like, absolutely relatable. Most relatable thing that's happened all week. I totally get that.
I don't know where they got the spoons from for it, but...
Well, they were in the kitchen.
Assume that they found some.
They were in the kitchen, weren't they?
Yeah. If the ice cream didn't blow up, then the spoons probably didn't either.
They were lucky it didn't melt. So at that moment, Sonia then goes into labour. I didn't see this coming at all. Bless her. Of course she was going to go into labour when she was trapped.
We called this months ago, Rob. We were like, well, she's obviously giving birth on the 40th anniversary, but brilliant.
Well, one of them was going to, weren't they? And it was always going to be Sonia, I think, with that little bit more legacy about her. I think it was always going to be Sonia who was going to give birth live to the nation. And so what happens at that point? Bianca realises that Sonia is in the pub. So she persuades Grant to help her sort of get in from the side to get to Sonia. Bianca manages to get Sonia and Lauren out of the kitchen and they kind of get into the main bar. Now, at that moment, Reese kind of regains consciousness, realises what's going on and sort of follows her in. And it's like, congratulations, Ronaldo. Obviously, I'm here because I'm the dad and you do love me. It's just your hormones talking. Madness.
That was so creepy when we heard Reese's voice and it was like, oh my God, you're joking.
And he's literally halfway through the serving hatch, like, hi.
Yeah. Hi.
Hiya.
It's me.
Sonia, somewhat predictably, is like, no, go away. I don't want you anywhere near me or this baby. In fact, I don't even want this baby. Stop this process. I don't want any of it to happen. If there's a way to stop this pregnancy right now, then I'm taking it. Let's not do
this. Rewind, please. Yeah. I don't want to do any of this yet.
Remove my pregnancy. Stop it all at once. I'm not interested. And Reese kind of is trying to get to Sonia, and Bianca pushes him. And he lands, and he sort of, I think he sort of knocks some sort of support that's holding that part of the ceiling up, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's such a comic. I think it's probably one of the most comic deaths EastEnders has ever done. It was, I did laugh a lot when it happened. It was funny. It was funny. Unfortunately, I think it was meant to be funny as well. That saves it.
It was very slapstick.
Very slapstick. It was, so a bit of a ceiling falls down. Mrs. Reese, and he's like, oh, that was close, wasn't it? And then immediately, Sylvie's bathtub crashes through the ceiling and lands on him and crushes him to death.
Brilliant.
And end
of Reese. Of course it does. Yeah, have you seen people saying, you know, Debbie had a stroke in a bathtub?
Yes.
Reese gets killed by a bathtub.
Yeah, that's a nice little bit of parallel. I also saw some people saying that the ghosts of the Queen Vic made all of that happen because the very, very, very first owner of the Queen Vic died in the bath. So maybe that was something to do with it as well. The explosion woke up the spirits of the Queen Vic and sort of made that happen like that. But Reese is squished like a cartoon character underneath the bath. And at one point, Bianca sort of looks out and nearly throws up. So Christ knows what state he was in. I imagine bathtub embedded in his skull or maybe even beheaded. Not well, put it like that. He's dead.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Oh, yeah. That were a good look from Patsy Palmer. I was like, oh, yeah, he's in a bad way.
He's very dead.
Yeah,
he's very, very dead. So Sonia's labour continues at that point. And I have to say, going into the live episode then at that point, the birth happens. So many things. Amazing. Patsy Palmer was phenomenal. Patsy was the comedy of the episode, of the live episode, for sure. Like, she was hilarious. Like, drinking the brandy, nearly throwing up from the brandy. And then saying to Lauren the immortal words, which I have to say, I really want to sort of be up there with You Ain't My Mother and get out of my pub. It's only a nunny, Lauren. I didn't know you could say nunny on national television.
Apparently you can. Especially... I didn't know you could say tits up.
No, either. I didn't know you could say tits up either. I was like, are you... They didn't care, did they? They're swearing.
Said it now. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? We're live. What are you going to do? It's only a nunny, Lauren. I mean, brilliant.
And then to herself, it's just a nunny.
Just a nunny. Get your legs open! Nunny. It's brilliant. Nunny, nunny, nunny. VEastender says it, so can I. Nunny, 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 nunny.
Yeah, we're going to get banned off YouTube now, aren't nunny. We, Rob? Nice one.
Nunny, nunny, nunny. Must be funny. Anyway.
Do you know what, though? I was surprised that Bianca were being so funny about it. I thought she'd just be like, I've got to get down there and do it. Like,
I don't know how I'd react in that situation. I really don't. You'd be all right, but you've done it all, haven't you?
So has Bianca said way That's more true. Times than me.
That's true. Way many more times than you. That's very true. That's why she says it's only a nunny. Off we go. Crack on.
Exactly.
And baby Julia is born. That was the second choice that we had. When you made the choice of Ravi and Jack, you also then got moved on to another question, which do you want to name it Julia or Tony with an I? And I think we're all very relieved that the public wisely went for Julia, because calling the kid Tony would have been ridiculous because of Tony, as in Bianca's ex, and Whitney.
Do you want to know what I voted?
Did you vote for Tony? You're ridiculous. Why? Did you not think of that?
Because I didn't even think about it. I didn't think about Peter. I want Tony with an I because it's quite cool.
Tony Jackson. Yeah, they can't call it Tony. In that family, they can't call it Tony, surely to God.
Literally, after I voted, I saw everybody saying it, and I'm like, I did not think of that. Clearly, no one did on EastEnders, though, either, to be fair, because they gave us the choice.
I feel like Julia was the obvious answer, and I feel like felt right as well, because you've got Julia's theme, you know. Julia's much more sort of a name that is more associated with the show, I think, than Tony.
Yeah, I didn't think any of that. I just thought Tony were right call name.
Let's go for that.
Yeah,
fair enough. But anyway, Julia is born now. I feel like it's going to be Julia Fowler.
Yes, especially given what's just happened as well. She was talking about it to Martin as well, weren't she?
They had a little
conversation about what the surname would be, because she's obviously still Sonny Fowler.
As it turned out. But really nice little monologue from Natalie Cassidy at the end. I thought Natalie Cassidy did really well with sort of... She was funny as well. The whole birth thing, actually, I think was the comedy of the episode, wasn't it? Because
did really well at that.
They did. And Natalie was doing, like, opera and stuff while she was giving birth. Thought it was excellent. And, like, pulling the most amazing facial expressions. Nobody pulls a facial expression like Natalie Cassidy. She's brilliant.
That is true.
She's absolutely excellent. So I wonder how much longer we've got Natalie for... How much longer is Sonia going to be around for?
Well, I think this is a great way to say that Sonia's going to say, I want a fresh start, all the Reese stuff, then Martin's died, then Martin. I want to get off the square.
Yeah.
I want a bit of a fresh start.
Yeah. So I think maybe after Martin's funeral?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I reckon so.
And her and Bianca can go off together, I think is where it'll lead.
I think that works, isn't it?
With Whitney, maybe? Or somewhere
with baby Julia. Can you imagine them going to see Whitney? This is Tony. That would have been awful.
I know. I saw a lot of people saying that online. Like, yeah.
With Bianca as well. Bianca going, yeah, this is Tony. Nothing to do with me. I just birthed it. I was just there looking at the
name. I would never have picked the name.
I just helped. So there we go. So that was the birth and all beautiful. And Reese is gone and that storyline is done. I hope we'll see Brenda again just one last time. I wonder if Reese is going to get a funeral. Do you think he will? I don't think they'll do it. They'll show it or anything. But
I think that's it, isn't it, with Reese?
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be how it comes out about Sin. No, I feel like that'll all just come out at Martin's funeral, though, to be honest.
Yeah. Martin's funeral is going to be a shit show. I think Cindy and Co
will be happy for it to all just go on Reese and that he just randomly decided to drive into the Vic. And then at Martin's funeral. Yeah. That's when Kathy will start feeling guilty.
I think so. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And Cindy will have a nerve to show up there, let me tell you now. Right, ladies and gents, let's finally talk about the biggest event of the week. As if all of that wasn't big enough, let's talk about the Vic explosion and Martin. Right, final big part of the week now. Well, arguably the big part of the week. We've sort of discussed bits and pieces of it, but this was the big Vic stunt explosion and everything that happened as a result of it. So, I mean, like we said, the explosion itself was great, wasn't it? Really big and mammoth. Really good. And kaboom! Like, really, really good. Really good.
It made me jump at one point when the actual bang happened. And the gunshot did as well, actually. Both those things I remember going.
Let me just say, the gunshot, I thought she shot him in the head.
It did look like that. I genuinely thought like she'd shot him and killed him. I'm not gonna lie.
Imagine if they just shot Ian Beale in the head there and then on the telly on the Wednesday episode. That would have been insane. Absolutely insane. Anyway, so that didn't happen. It's fine. It went in his arm, and then we never spoke of it again.
And that was that.
The stunt itself. I mean, the Vic was trashed. Now,
yes,
are they going to change it much? Do we think is the Vic going to?
No.
Or do you reckon it's just going to look exactly the same?
I think it'll look exactly the same, but maybe they'll do some slight...
A picture of Martin on the bar. That'll be it.
Yes, that'll be replacing Lola. Sorry, Lola, you've definitely gone now.
Definitely gone now, yeah.
Maybe they might just chuck in a couple of modern twists somehow, just to modernise it a little bit. But I think it'll just be the same, if I'm honest.
This is the thing. They always do this with soap pubs. And it's sort of like, how do you make it? I don't even think it's possible to make it look exactly the same. But they manage it. Whatever you like, the Rovers burnt down twice and they looked exactly the same afterwards. It's like, how do you do that?
Do you know what they did, though, like I noticed with the Rovers? They kind of changed, like, you know, like the seating padding, like...
Oh, changed the seat
like boots.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it was only slightly, and it was a slightly more modern pattern than the one that had been on before. So that's the kind of changes I'm wondering that they might do at the Queen Vic. But it'll still be the same colour scheme and everything, I would have thought. They can't get rid of the burgundy woodwork, surely.
No, I mean, I don't think that... The residents would want it changing all that drastically, would they? But you could imagine there'd be some... It would be interesting to see if there's any little sort of changes for the next 40 years or until the next time they decide to burn the Vic down. We'll see.
And it depends if the Knights are still going to be running it.
Well, indeed. Who knows what changes might be afoot. So the Vic blows up and it is like the whole building sort of just is affected in some way. Timber everywhere, to the point where I was a little bit unsure as to where everybody was. Like the main bulk of people were in the bar, and they seemed all right, to be fair, considering that they'd just all been blown. They'd all been blown up. Is it weird? I mean, I don't know whether this is actually possible or true of what actually happens in real life in that sort of situation. Is it weird that I've always sort of wanted to be in a building like that and then just to emerge absolutely fine and just be covered in a few cuts and bruises and look like a right hero?
It's a bit weird, Rob. Though,
you can just stroll out and be like, "Well, that was a dramatic day. Look at me now. I survived."
Oh well, look at me,
hero.
Just brush off a bit of debris.
Yeah. Good. Do you know what?
I think you're just a dramatic person, Rob. That's why you're hoping that'll happen to you.
Talking of debris, can I just say I saw an amazing line on Twitter: Reese killed Debbie, but was killed by debris. I thought it was very good. Genius.
There you go.
Genius.
Perfect.
Well done, that person. So anyway, the main bulk of the characters are all in the main bar. They all seem okay. No one seems terribly injured or anything. And Ravi manages to break one of the windows and they all basically manage to climb out. So the only ones that are kind of trapped in there are Sonia and Lauren in the kitchen. Stacey, I think, was in the loo, wasn't she? When it blew up. So she was in the loo. So all the timber had kind of collapsed down there. So Martin stays behind, like the hero he is, to save Stacey, which, if anything, would have told Ruby everything she needed to know at that moment, I would have thought.
I think it did. They had a little moment where they looked at each other. Because I think that's a moment where Martin should have said to Ruby, "I love you." And he just kind of stared at her and went,
"Yeah,
I'm gonna go get Stacey now."
Couldn't say it. I mean, to be fair, at least someone stayed behind because all the rest of the family was like, "Right, bye, Stace, love you, bye." Just strolled out.
I mean, Jean did try, and Alfie was like, "I need to get out." No, she didn't try that hard, because if that were my daughter in there, no matter her age, I would not be leaving until I'd got her out with me. I must admit.
Yeah, bearing in mind the last time that Stacey was trapped in the Vic when it was burning. They had to literally physically stop Jean from climbing up a ladder to try and reach her at the top floor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So less effort this time, Jean, I would say. Less. Getting older now, bless her. She couldn't be arsed.
She's getting old, I'm going
to
say.
She can't go home and have a cup of tea.
Sure, Martin will help you.
Yeah, Martin will be all right. You sort that out, Martin. I need a cup of tea. Like, this has been
I'll get a sausage surprise on for when you're out.
Yes. And the only other person that's trapped is Sharon, who got soaked by a drink from Kim, who was dancing too extravagantly, and found herself trapped on the stairs. Let's go here first, shall we, Ree? Because I think arguably this was people's favourite moment of the week, of everything that happened. So Sharon is lying there, kind of covered in debris. It's not looking great for Sharon. She turns her head, and who is standing before her? It's only Ange.
Ange Watts.
It's only Ange. What a moment. What an incredible moment, right? It was amazing.
Right. Do you know what was even more amazing is that it was so unspoiled. I love an unspoiled moment. It was so unexpected, weren't it?
Well, do you know how unspoiled it was? Apparently they closed off the set. So a lot of the cast didn't know. Kelly Bright did a thing on Instagram saying that she had no idea that that was happening.
Yeah.
So it would have been one of those things that they would have, similar to the way that they brought Kathy back, apparently, like just very few people knew it was happening. They closed off the set, didn't tell anybody, and then just filmed the scene. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Loved it. Anita still looks the part, doesn't she? Even after all these years. And then to look at the credits at the end, when you've got like Nigel, Grant, Bianca, Sharon, Angie, all in the credits all at the same time in 2025. What a time to be alive. What a show. And, love it.
And I feel like they pulled it off because, again,
completely.
It was a surreal moment, really. People aren't always that keen on those kind of moments.
Oh, but
it totally worked.
Now, do you know what I think that was, though? Was the fact that Sharon, like, I think some people might have interpreted it as, you know, she was close to death, but then the ghost of Angie returned and said, it's not ready, not quite yet. But what I saw that was... Well, see, interesting, because I thought that that was Sharon realising that she needed to have her mum's strength and was just imagining what her mum would be saying to her at that moment, and that's the way it manifested itself.
Oh, I didn't see it in that way at all. I saw it the first way that you said, ghost because, way. Yeah, not necessarily a ghost, but weirdly, I was reading people having these near-death experiences not that long ago, and so many people say that they've seen a relative. Like, I remember reading someone's story that they saw their uncle, and they literally say to him, we're not ready for you yet, and then they wake up, and then they're back, like, on Earth kind of thing.
Yeah,
so I interpreted it very much as that.
Who cares? You know, you can interpret it any way you like. I suppose it's one of those sorts of situations, isn't it? Like, so however you see it, it still worked an absolute treat. It was... I think the highlight of the week, I think it was just an incredible moment. Again, like you say, completely unspoiled, complete surprise to have Angie Watts standing there and just being Angie. When she was saying to Sharon at the end of the end of her little monologue, yeah, you shout. She was doing it in exactly the same sort of tone that she would yell at Den. You know, it was just an argumentative bargy mode. I loved it. It was amazing. Beautiful moment. Fair play to him for getting that. Like, absolutely spot on. Spot on.
And it worked. Oh. Sharon shouted.
Oh, didn't Sharon she just? Shouted. Top of her lungs. And fortunately, Grant walks in at that exact moment, turns around and goes, oh, Sharon, you're there. And just sort of just picks her up off the stairs and carries her out.
Fireman's lift.
Fireman's lift. Takes her out the pub. All is well. Sharon's off to hospital. Marvellous. Sharon's safe. And then obviously what goes on with the baby, we discussed that already. They get out. All is well there. The only ones that aren't well are Martin and Stacey, because some rubble comes down and sort of traps them. And this is all Stacey's fault. And she's going to feel horrifically guilty about this, because she literally said, no, we're not moving anywhere until we've sorted this out. I'm not leaving this collapsing building until me and you have spoken about our feelings some more. All right.
And even Martin were like, timing, Stacey. Now, she's like, no, now. I'm not leaving here. I think I messaged you while I was watching it like, Stacey, what the... are you doing? Get out of there now.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you said that you sort of knew Martin was going to die last week, fine, but I sort of, I think from that moment was like, right. I mean, obviously, I kind of, we said all along, and we've said all along for quite a number of weeks now, it's the sort of the Martins of Albert Square. When you get to a big anniversary like this, that's when you need to start worrying about those sorts of characters. So it's not like Martin was ever not on the list of like, could die, it's a possible. But then, you know, just the way that it sort of played out with Stacey not letting him leave, it was sort of like, yeah, this isn't looking good for Martin whatsoever, is it? And it was some great stuff between the pair of them, you know, just really talking about, like, their relationship. And, I mean, James Bayh and Lacey Turner work amazingly well together. Their chemistry on screen is great, isn't it?
Yeah,
and,
like, they really do.
They're such sweet characters together. So they sort of have this big old conversation about their feelings, and eventually Martin says, yeah, I love you. Of course, I love you. Like, it's always going to be you. The Stacey's all smug at the moment. Right, we can leave now. We can leave the collapsing building now. Come on, then. Now we can leave. And then, obviously, just as they're about to leave, they have to go through the barrel store. And a beam comes down, slides down, very dramatic, slides down the wall. This massive beam comes down, traps Martin on the legs, and he can't move. And that then leads us into the live episode. And I mean, at the end, I think at the top of everyone's list at that point was Martin was going to die. I think everyone was sort of like, we're just now hoping that he doesn't.
Yes. Definitely.
And they were so cruel with it because they twisted us left, right, and centre. Because the go to option at that point was Martin's going to die, and then they sort of kept twisting it, saying, "Oh, he might not. He's going to be all right. He might not be all right." No, he wasn't all right. Martin did succumb to his injuries. And then just moments as soon as he said, "Oh, so I told you it was going to be all right," that was it. I was like, "Well, he's dead now, then, isn't he?" He said mm-hmm. that. Why did you have to say that, Martin? You're dead.
Obviously not going to be all right, is it? I mean, I think we knew as soon as the... Like you say, at the end of Wednesday night's episode, it was very obvious, weren't it, that Martin were going to die. Then we had all the, oh, well, they weren't there. Paramedics came.
Gorgeous paramedic, by the way. Can I just say, if I was Martin, I'd be quite happy to have that man be the last thing I saw before I died.
You always like all the doctors and nurses that they have, I've noticed, Rob. It's always maybe it's the uniform.
Maybe. I've got a type.
There you go. But... props to all the extras as well who did this episode live as well.
Yeah.
Because must have been so nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I mean, I always think it's amazing, especially, in that sort of setting where, they've got to be constantly doing stuff like moving rubble around and all of that kind of thing. Like, fair play to them. I mean, the live episode itself, let's talk about that, because as a whole, I don't think that anybody put a foot wrong. I thought it was perfectly executed, sublime episode in itself. I thought it was... I didn't notice anything going wrong. One of those things you sort of watch and go, wouldn't know it was live, apart from that sort of rawness that the live episodes have.
There's like an energy, I think you can feel.
It's the adrenaline, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But genuinely, at points when I was watching it, I like kept forgetting that it was a live episode.
Oh, yeah,
100%. They all did so well.
Like, I always get... go on.
I was just going to say, props to... I think that's the best live episode that they've ever
done. Do you? Oh, that's good. That's interesting. Yeah.
In terms of, there being no mistakes and everything, and it genuinely... not.
There wasn't a house album moment.
No, there weren't. No. Which I was kind of like, oh, Cody, we're going to have one, but... Yeah. They always say that, though, don't they? They just do it to cheer us up. Like, oh, I just messed that line up.
Oh, yeah. I did that deliberately. Deliberately. Yeah, I mean, I think out of the live episodes they've done, I'm gonna maybe say that it was the most technically difficult one they've done. I think.
Definitely, yeah.
Because they had like smoke and pyrotechnics and a lot more extras than I think they've had before. I mean, yes, in the 25th one, they had Bradley falling off the roof and police chasing him. So that must have been insanely difficult to achieve live. Poor Stacey. Yeah, I know, right? Oh, yeah, I mean, 15 years to the day that she loses Bradley, she then loses Martin. We'll talk about that in a second, because Jesus Christ. The 30th, the 30th was, I think, more intimate, because obviously that was all going on in the Beale house. They had the big firework display at the end, which could have gone horrifically wrong on live television, but it didn't. That was fine. But I think with this one, there was a lot more smoke, there was a lot more effects, there was like rubble and stuff kicking off everywhere, like the square looked quite wide, full of people. It looked a lot more of a spectacle and more complicated, I think.
Yes, it felt a lot more full as well. Yeah. Like, felt like pretty much the entire cast were there, didn't it?
Yeah,
I don't think they quite were, but not far off.
I was looking at it. I think the only person that wasn't there was Grant, because Jesse Wallace had not been in the week up to there. And was kind of, 'cause it does happen. It does happen that it just is not there. You know, they just don't show up that week, but she did show up for the live, so that was nice. Jay showed up for the live because he missed the 35th week entirely. So I was pleased to see Jay.
When did Jay show up?
I did see him. He came in, he was in the calf, and then he was there at the end. Okay. He was there at the end as well. So he was there. I can't think of anybody that wasn't there, to be honest. Grant wasn't there. Sharon wasn't there. Cindy wasn't there. But they had logical character reasons for not being there. I mean, what I mean is actors that just weren't there for no reason. Yeah. And I can't think of any. I think they were mostly all involved some way. And just the way that it sort of culminated in Martin dying was great. I mean, it was heartbreaking. It really, really was. It was absolutely devastating. I was bereft at the end of the episode.
It would just... Martin and Stacey together having those moments, we all knew what was happening because we're like, we're not focusing on this conversation for no reason. This is the last conversation. And then when Stacey went over to the paramedic and we're like, there's something you're not telling me, is there? Is this the first time you've heard of, what is it, Crush Syndrome?
Crush Syndrome. So, yeah, I mean, well, it's not, I mean, I guessed that this, I mean, I knew that this was a thing, that if you have a large beam on your legs and then remove the big, because they always say, don't take it off yet, like, that you can't just rip, you know, it's, I didn't know it was an actual syndrome. I just thought it was sort of like one of those things that just happens, you know, like if you stand outside in the cold for 5 hours, you're going to have pneumonia, you know, you wouldn't call it cold syndrome, would you? So I kind of just figured that it was just a thing that happened, but no, apparently it has got an official name. So, yeah, I think from that point onwards, it was sort of written on the wall that Martin was going to die. Let's talk about Lacey Turner, who was, I mean, James Bay and Lacey Turner were both phenomenal. Let's not pretend. But Lacey Turner, heavily pregnant throughout most of the anniversary week, covered in rubble and throwing rubble around. And then she goes off and has a baby and then returns to give the performance of a lifetime in the anniversary live episode.
I'm clapping into the mic for Lacey Turner because that was incredible. The fact that she was so pregnant before, like, 6 weeks ago, had the baby, then come back and done that live episode. Yeah. And pretty much been, like, one of the main characters in it. Do you
Can
know?
Can you imagine?
She won't have had sleep, and she did that. She will not be sleeping. She's stunning. She's done that episode.
She is. We are so lucky to have Lacey Turner because she is incredible. She is up there with one of the great British actors, and because she's in a soap, that doesn't get recognised. Yeah. But she is phenomenal. But
do you know what, though, Rob? She didn't quite. There was something missing. She could have given birth, like, on air.
She could have been the live birth. She could have held off.
Or in the rubble, you know, 6 weeks ago, you know, she could have given birth then. Yeah. She could have given birth at some point. So
selfish for the baby not to come out then. I mean, can you imagine, though, the role that, considering the role that Stacey had this week, can you imagine the producers when she's around was like, I'm pregnant? What? What do you mean you're pregnant?
I think they're like, are you joking me?
Are you actually kidding?
Not that we're allowed to be prejudiced against a woman who's decided to get pregnant, but are you joking?
Are you actually joking? Do you realise how integral you are to the anniversary?
Well, like, she delivered in many ways, didn't she? So there you go.
Massively delivered. So, I mean, all the awards for Lacey Turner. I mean, like I say, James Bay as well was phenomenal.
Yeah,
the pair of them together were phenomenal. But I just think that the way that Lacey Turner just didn't, you wouldn't know, if you didn't know that Lacey Turner was pregnant, you wouldn't know that anything had gone
on. That had all happened.
And then she went and did that. Like, absolutely stunning stuff from Lacey Turner. Mm-hmm. Fair play. So, talking about Martin and killing off Martin Fowler, where are we at?
Right. Honestly, like, obviously, I'd guessed, I only thought it was going to be Sonia or Martin. It needed to be a big character. I felt like it was going to be one of them. So, I wasn't surprised that it was Martin. Do I agree that they should have done it? If I'm honest, no, because I feel like we could have kept Martin. There was still plenty of room for Martin to have been on the square and had some storylines. That last Fowler there, unless, of course, Julia is going to be classed as some kind of honorary Fowler now, it would appear. But then again, they needed to kill our legacy character. Would we have agreed with any of them being killed? It had to be somebody, didn't it? And it was fitting that it was Martin.
I mean, I was sort of, I mean, it's crazy. I think when you get to a stage with it, I was literally sort of, because we knew that Natalie Cassidy was leaving, I was sort of like, okay, fine, kill Sonia off. Because as the episode was building up and it was looking more and more obvious that Martin was about to cark it, I was like, fine, kill Sonia off. Just kill Sonia off, please, please, anything but this, anything. Mm-hmm. He's a legacy character. Like, he was the first born on the show. You know, we were talking about Martin from the very first episode when Pauline was sat in Dr. Legg's office when Dem burst in to use the phone when he found Reg Cox. So even more so than Ian Beale, we've literally watched Martin from the cradle to the grave. So it's a kind of crazy thing to look at EastEnders now without Martin Fowler. Like, he's dead. Yeah. That's it. He's gone.
And there's no bringing him back from the dead.
No bringing him back.
This is
no,
fully he, like, he has died.
Definitely, definitely dead. We officially saw that body. He's very, very dead. And it's kind of crazy at this point. Like, an effective character death means that the audience needs to mourn and needs to be absolutely devastated that a character's gone.
Yeah.
So I feel like once that feeling has gone, because I was bereft last night. I really, really was, like, just realizing that Martin's dead. I was gutted because I love Martin. And I think James Bye has been one of the most successful recasts the show has ever had.
100%. And it took me so long to get used to him as Martin as well. Once he was, like, now, I wouldn't be able to go back to the old, I wouldn't have ever gone back to the old Martin, because now he is Martin.
Yeah. So, I mean, apparently James Bye chose to leave, so they just kept that quiet and sort of used James Bye's exit to do the anniversary, which makes it, I think, a little bit more forgivable, because you've then got to look at, right, okay, so how do you get rid of Martin? If you're not going to kill Martin, how the hell do you get rid of him? Because Martin is just one of those people that was never going to leave the square. All his kids are there, all his family's there, all of his history is there. Martin's one of those people that would just be quite happy just to live and die on the square. Right, he hasn't got aspirations he hasn't got aspirations to sort of go off and do anything else. He's quite happy just being on his fruit and veg market for the rest of his life. That's Martin. So how do you get rid of Martin? And if you look back over the past few weeks, even, there's been signs what they were heading towards, because, you know, the fruit and stall sign that got made, that's going to be an epitaph. The fact that they did the cat and mouse chase, the cat and mouse game show in the Vic, that was sort of a last kind of hurrah for Martin to sit there and be with his parents again. That was
and
a thing.
Some foul history for us all. Yeah.
So the signs were all there. That was where we were heading for. Where am I at the moment with Martin? I mean, I think it's going to depend on how they then go forward. There needs to be, I think, storyline justification for killing off Martin at this stage.
Yes. There are a lot of things that can happen from it, because obviously we know that Lacey Turner needs to go on maternity leave, so it's obviously going to be something to do with this.
Yeah,
I was thinking, obviously, Ruby, let's not forget, she was actually going out with Martin. Little does she know about the conversation that Stacey's had.
Yeah,
I think Stacey's going to tell Ruby.
Do you not?
So when Martin and Stacey were talking, and they were talking about getting married, Stacey said something like, Martin said, we should, you know, we can declare our love in front of everyone. And Stacey said, why do we need to? Why can't we just keep it between us? We know how we feel about each other. Mm. Which makes me think she's not going to tell Ruby about what, like, the lead up to Martin's death. She's not going to tell her anything, I don't think.
I think she will eventually.
I think Ruby's going to... Yeah, eventually. But I think
at the
Ruby's
funeral, most likely.
Probably. But I think Ruby's going to spend a lot of this morning time not having a clue about the conversations.
Will she not have a clue, though? Because you kind of got she had a kickoff in the live episode. It was like, why is Stacey with him? And it's sort of like, actually, she's going to be absolutely furious that Stacey was with him in his final moments as opposed to her.
And I could be wrong, because Stacey might just be feeling so guilty about the fact that she made him stay there and have that conversation.
She needs to.
So she might just go out and tell everyone. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, it's going to... So that storyline justification as to why they had to kill Martin off, that now, to make it seem worth it to lose Martin, it now needs to sort of... A bit like the Lucy story did, when you killed off Lucy, that to set the show in a different direction and sort of, you know, we're still talking about it years and years later. That kind of, I think, needs to be the effect from Martin's death now, for it to feel like it was worth killing off Martin, in my opinion.
So... It depends how much people are going to admit straight away. Like I say, like we've said, is Cindy ever going to admit to it? Is Kathy going to be the one who outs Cindy for basically start causing it all? Is everybody going to be happy that Reese just takes the flak for it? Because obviously he crashed the car.
Mm.
Long term, I mean, Sharon's going to be distraught as well. There's so many people on the square who are just going to be so distraught. Lily could go a certain way
with
what's happened for losing her dad. And obviously his kids.
And as for the funeral,
Who
are we going to get for the funeral? I did say, as we were kind of predicting stuff for the anniversary week, a shock return. I don't think either of us said Angie, did we? But that's what we got. But I was saying maybe he's got the Tolster back. Maybe Susan Tully might actually return to the role of Michelle for one last time. I don't think that door's closed now that she's going to eventually. I mean, she never came back for either Arthur or Pauline's funeral, but she might do it for Martin.
You never know. Yeah, because this would be the last time to get her back if she's going to do it, I think.
Yeah, because she's now the very last Fowler. So if she's going to. It would feel insane if she didn't come back. I mean, maybe they might get Jenna Russell back in if Susan Tully says no, but I feel like they're going to be begging Susan Tully to come back to it if she does.
Well, let's just hope, but hey, we might be pleasantly surprised.
She might
do
it.
I don't feel like she's going to come back, though, you know.
No,
but then again, this would be, it'd be more fitting for her to come back for this than for the 40th week, actually. Maybe.
We'll see. We'll have to wait and see. But I think on the whole, the week was pretty stunning, wasn't it? Like, yes, there's bits and pieces where we were sort of like, the Kathy stuff, I'm not convinced with at all. And time will tell whether Martin's death is worth it in the long run, because I was always struck by a conversation I read in an interview with a guy called H.V. Kershaw, who was an old producer of Coronation Street. And, you know, the death of Martha Longhurst in the 60s, that was the first big death that Corrie did. And that was a producer coming in and wanting to shake things up a little bit. And Martha Longhurst, you had the threesome in the snug, you know, Ina, Minnie and Martha. It was seen as like an outrageous move to kill off this character that had been there from the start. And H.V. Kershaw said that that was an interesting example of a time where you had a great couple of episodes and a nice bit of aftermath, but then after that you were left with a show without Martha. And that's kind of the vibe that you sort of wonder, like, at the minute now we've got a show without Martin, so storyline wise is it going to feel justified in a few months' time? Time will tell.
Time will tell.
But yeah, on the whole, I think a great anniversary. Like, fair play, smashed it out of the park. The live episode was excellent, well done. I think
amazing. Standing ovation, but you won't be able to see us, so we'll do a sitting down ovation.
Yeah. Standing ovation.
There we go.
And we wait to see whether bravo. And we wait to see if all the decisions will be worth it in the long run. But on the face of it, bravo. Gold star this week, Ree. I mean, hard, difficult. Probably the hardest we've ever done.
It really is. And I really want to give it to Martin because it's gonna be his last one, but I've got to give it to Stacey. I've got to.
Yeah,
and I think
I'll have to give mine to Martin because, wow. But
perfect them.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knocked it out of the park this week. Cast, crew, you were amazing. Like, fair play. Thank you very much for giving us a great anniversary. Amazing. Absolutely brilliant. And the final section of the podcast, ladies and gents, in this mammoth episode, is what you guys thought of the show and the week.
So we've got a comment from Sirkaholic who says, I still haven't recovered from Bradley dying and then they kill Martin on the announcement of Bradley's death. I fear I will need a therapist now. Personally, I'm going to need some time off work to grieve.
I think so.
Referring to it, Bradley's anniversary there.
I think we all need a period of national mourning to get over this one. I mean, it's mad, isn't it? Like 15 years to the day that Bradley did it and Stacey has to go through all that again. Poor cow, honestly. What's she done to deserve that? That's so sad. I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? I think that they couldn't have just have killed just Reese. Like, if the only death in the anniversary had been Reese being squashed by a bathtub, that would have felt slightly underwhelming, wouldn't it? So they had to kill somebody big off. They did have to kill somebody big off.
I was expecting another death, I must admit.
Not enough for you. Not enough bloodshed.
No, I think we should have had Reese, a legacy character, and then somebody, like, in between, maybe Callum, dare I say.
No, you're
or Felix, even, you know, people
you're
that
brave.
Aren't doing a great deal. Well, I've said it.
You said it now. Remember, Ree said that. I didn't say it. Georgina Berry says, that was really quite hard to watch, but pretty much forgot that it was live. It was so good. Bianca managing to get a few funny lines in there. I worry that Ruby will supposedly, understandably, not make it easy for Stacey when she comes out. The Stacey and Ruby feud is going to be slightly intensified from here on in, isn't it? It's interesting because Ruby actually hasn't done that much wrong since she's been back. Like, sometimes Ruby will come in and be quite an antagonistic character. She's not done that much wrong, really, that she deserves to be blamed entirely for this, but I don't think it's going to end well for Ruby. I really don't.
I mean, technically, it's Stacey who's been in the wrong because she's kind of been chasing after Martin whilst he's with Ruby.
And then trapped him in a building until he said that he wanted to be in love with her.
Until he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, God. There is that. We've got a comment here from KJ Heron who says, I'm not okay. Why Martin? It made for great telly, but it broke my heart. I just knew it was going to be Sonia and she would get her Julia's theme, but no. She just named the baby Julia and we lose Martin.
Mm. Julia was born as Julia's theme played. That's nice, isn't it? Yeah. Yes.
Of course.
Lauren Charles said, I thought it was excellent, but I'm absolutely devastated that Martin is gone. It's looked that way since the foreshadowing with the early 40th celebration last year. Yeah, because he was 40 early, wasn't he? Yes.
Yeah.
But it was just so sad. So well acted by James and Lacey.
Got another comment here from Maggie May I, who says, that was so upsetting. I can't believe Martin's gone and that none of the core followers remain on the square. Phil's storyline was stunningly written and acted. I'm curious to see if Grant takes this week's events as a chance to reflect on their upbringing and how it has shaped his behaviour and decisions.
So we also last week asked you to send us your thoughts on EastEnders, your memories, your favourite storylines, and you delivered. Ree, let's see what they sent us.
We've got one here from Starscreamed who says, favourite moment of all time. Pat to a packed synagogue. She knows exactly who I am, and her name ain't Judith Bernstein. It's Janine Butcher. I should know. I'm her stepmother, and she's about as Jewish as a bacon sandwich.
Genius line. That one, by the way, did you know that was written by Julia Honor, who is a bit of a legendary name within the EastEnders writers team, because Julia Honor isn't a real person, and that is. And the name they throw out when a script isn't quite working and a few writers need to come in and fix it, it becomes the credit of Julia Honor. And that was one of those episodes. There you go.
Well, it really worked for him, didn't it? Well done, Julia Honor.
Well done, Julia Honor. My 6% says, I've been a fan of EastEnders since I was very young in the 80s and have watched on and off ever since. My favourite ever scene has to be the one where Peggy found out about Pat and Frank. The screaming, the slaps, the drama. Oh, and it gets extra EastEnders points because someone did a remix of it back in the day, which can be found on YouTube. Just search, you bitch, you cow, EastEnders remix. There you go. And he also says, love the podcast. You guys are so wonderfully dorky about EastEnders.
Thank you.
Fine, yeah.
Do you know, I love this week when we've been getting all of these phone calls from various radio stations and they say, yeah. Oh, you're an EastEnders super fan. And I said it to one of them. I said, that's a lovely way of saying like utter geek.
Utter geek, EastEnders. Yeah.
But yeah.
Absolute nerds, the pair of us. Nerds. It's the sort of obsession that you get dead arms for in school, the obsession that we have about this show, really, isn't it?
Mm, yes. Yeah. We've got a comment from 21 Grams of Soul who says, ode to my best memory of EastEnders when they did two two-handers back-to-back, Little Mo and Cat, yes. And then Cat and Alfie, after Cat had come back and found out Little Mo and Alfie had been having an emotional affair.
Yes, I remember that. And also, they did the back-to-back two-handers with, obviously, the famous Pat and Peggy two-hander with the You Bitch, You Cow, but that was then followed by another two-hander between Frank and Roy as well.
Oh, yeah. I remember that days. One.
Oh, the two-handers. I
had no chance with Frank around, did
it? No, none whatsoever. And Peggy had no chance with Pat around, really, did she?
True.
None whatsoever. No. And I hope the two-handers continue. We're obviously going into a new era soon, so hopefully Ben Wadey knows that two-handers are a good thing and a thing of EastEnders. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Right, ladies and gents, that is it for this week. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you for all your comments, all your thoughts, all your love and attention. We love you as much as you love us, darlings. Thank you very much. If you'd like to get in touch with us by any means or about anything, you can do the following.
You can find us on Facebook at Albert Square After Dark, on Twitter and Instagram at E20 After Dark. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to give us a like and subscribe. You can listen to us on Apple and all your favourite podcast sites. Drop us an email at e20afterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to buy us a 40th anniversary coffee, you can do so by going on buymeacoffee.com/E20After Dark.
Yes, you can indeed. Thank you once again for watching and for listening. And we will now go into EastEnders' 41st year. What madness will be about to occur? Who knows? But we will be there for it, and we hope you will too. Until next week, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.